last Lord's Day. We began in chapter 7 and verse 8, and where we saw that the assimilation of the people was complete in the 10 tribes. Hedonism had permeated everything, the political, the religious, the culture, and institutions. And it had come about slowly, like one of the terms mentioned was like the graying of the hair. Instead of seeking God, they had put their trust in political alliances. When they assembled, it wasn't to worship God, it was to worship their idols. So in chapter 8, it spoke of the inevitable judgment to come. Their false gods and the kings that weren't sanctioned by God caused them just real havoc. They had violated God's covenant with them. There had not been a king who had worshiped God. So God's going to, we saw God is gathering the nations against them. A warning was also issued to Judah in that last chapter. They had put their trust in fortified cities. And beginning in chapter 9, Hosea tells them it is time to grieve. They're going to be forced into exile, but he's looked upon as a fool. And so we finished at verse 8 of chapter 9. So that's where we ended up, and I'll just pick up reading here at verse 8, I believe. Verse 8, chapter 9. The watchman of Ephraim is with my God, but the prophet is a fowler's snare in all his ways, enmity in the house of his God. They are deeply corrupted as in the days of Gibeah. He will remember their iniquity. He will punish their sins. I found Israel like grapes in the wilderness. I saw your fathers as the first fruits on the fig tree in its first season. But they went to Baal Peor and separated themselves to that shame. They became an abomination like the things they loved. As for Ephraim, their glory shall fly away like a bird. No birth, no pregnancy, no conception. Though they bring up their children, yet I will bereave them to the last man. Yes, woe to them when I depart from them. Just as I saw Ephraim like Tyre planted in a pleasant place, so Ephraim will bring out his children to the murderer. Give them, O Lord, what will you give? Give them a miscarrying womb and dry breast. All their wickedness is in Gilgal, for I hated them because of their evil deeds. I will drive them from my house. I will love them no more. All their princes are rebellious. Ephraim is stricken. Their root is dried up. They shall bear no fruit. Yes, were they to bear children, I would kill the darlings of their womb. My God cast them away because they did not obey him, and they shall be wanderers among the nations. So the warnings and the sins just keep getting bigger and bigger. And so he talks about a watchman there. And I think here Hosea is God's appointed watchman to preach God's will. If you have an ASV version, it will read a watchman of his, or it might say a God against my God. So, which indicated that Israel was the spy or the watchman. I think here, though, we have what is being said here, that God is the watchman. In Ezekiel chapter 3, we have that God did appoint watchmen or prophets. The prophets are the watchmen to be with him. And we have that reference to Gibeah. And it's quite a, had quite a history. I probably don't have all of it, but again, it's in the tribe of Benjamin, 5 miles north of Jerusalem, or 6, depending on which path you take. It was a Levitical city. It was on a high place, an exceeding high place, on the top of a hill. It is a place where Saul was anointed king. It was a place where all Saul's sons were killed. It was where the tent of meeting was when Solomon worshipped there. David worshipped there for a short time until the the temple was completed. We see that in 1 Chronicles chapter 16. And also, it was where God appeared to Solomon, and God gave him wisdom. That's in 2 Chronicles 1. And so, after the temple was completed, it was no longer a place for worship. After Solomon's reign, there were just all kinds of wicked kings that came along. And so, in verses 10 through 17, God finds Israel as he called them. They were a delight to him, but they became corrupted so much it was beyond the ability for God to save them or claim them. And one of the things they did, this when it talks about Baal Peor, that was the principal god of the Moabites. And so each one of these tribes had a principal god that they looked after. Their lust, their desire for material things seduced them to this idol worship. A person generally will become what they worship. In verse 11, we might look at this verse as their glory is in God himself, but he's going to depart from them. And the result of God's departure will be the infertility and premature death. I'm going to go over to Deuteronomy chapter 28, beginning in verse 15. And we'll have here, they were warned of these things in the second reading of the law. So 15 through 18, Deuteronomy chapter 28. But it shall come to pass, if you do not obey the voice of the Lord your God, to observe carefully all his commandments and his statutes, we note the word carefully there, which I command you today, that these curses will come upon you. And there's a really long list of curses here. Just a few of them. Cursed shall you be in the city. Cursed shall you be in the country. Cursed shall your basket and your kneading bowl. Cursed shall be the fruit of your body and the produce of your land, the increase of your cattle, the offspring of your flock. Cursed shall you be when you come in. Cursed shall you be when you go out. The Lord will send on you confusion, cursings, rebuke you in all you set your hand to do until you are destroyed and until you perish quickly because of the wickedness of your doing in which you have forsaken me. The Lord will make the plague cling to you until he has consumed you from the land to which you are going. Will strike you with consumption. And it just go on and on. 25, cause you to be defeated by those who are going to come to you. So, they had no excuse, but they weren't taught anymore. And that's an admonition to us. Whenever we have the opportunity to teach, we need to teach. And we should look for opportunities to teach. We should be encouraging our families with children to indoctrinate them in God's Word. And, indoctrinate's a pretty strong word, but that's what we need to do. We need to do things like that. And so we also see that they'll cease to glory in their numbers. And I think no children are going to be born. We read of numbering in other places. We know that David was rebuked. God was displeased with him for numbering the people. I'd like to go over to 1 Chronicles chapter 21 now and just read a little bit there. 1 Chronicles 21. And verses 5 through 7, I think that's what it is. Then Joab gave the sum of the number of the people to David. All Israel had 1,100,000 men who draw the sword. So we're talking at least a little over 2 million people at this time. And then in Judah there was 470,000 men, but not counting Levi and Benjamin among them. And God was displeased, therefore he struck Israel. So David said to God, I've sinned greatly because I have done this thing, but I pray now, take away the iniquity of your servant, for I have done foolishly. And so it is thought that the Hebrews were more multiplying than other nations. And we saw that down in Egypt. The people were greatly outnumbering the people of Egypt. And so I think one of the things that reason David did this was probably a lot of pride. Look how many people that I have to serve me. I think we see other occasions where David's power went to his head, and he had to be rebuked. The multiplication of people is seen in Psalm 128, verses 1 to 6. But now their children are going to perish at whatever stage of life they're in, or they're not going to come to life. And we do remember that if a person was barren, a woman was barren, it was really looked upon in Israel with, it was a mark of divine, not having divine favor. So we have all this going. Verses 13 and 14, Israel is compared to the status of Tyre. We see that in Ezekiel 26, and I'll go on over there and read Ezekiel 26. And let's see, we're going to be looking at verses 1 through 6. Came to pass in the 11th year, on the first day of the month, that the word of the Lord came to me, saying, Son of man, because Tyre has set against Jerusalem, she's broken. Who was the gateway of the peoples? She is turned over to me. I shall be filled. She is laid waste. Therefore, thus says the Lord God, behold, I am against you, O Tyre, and I will cause many nations to come against you as the sea causes its waves to come up. And they shall destroy the walls of Tyre and break down her towers. I will also scrape her dust from her and make her like the top of a rock. It shall be a place for spreading of nets in the midst of the sea, for I have spoken, says the Lord God. It shall become a plunder for nations, and her daughter villages which are in the fields shall be slain by the sword. Then they shall know that I am the God. So it wasn't just Tyre that was scraped off the face of the earth. It was the village around them. And Tyre actually fell in 722 B.C., and so I'll stop there and see if there's any comments or questions you might have.
You reference Deuteronomy 28. Interesting, in that chapter, this is near the time where they're going to be entering.
Right.
Mm-hmm. The Canaan land, finally. But Moses goes through this. The first 15 verses, he tells them what blessings they would receive for their obedience. 15 verses. But then from 16 to 63, I think it is, or 68, 52 verses for their disobedience. What happens if they don't obey these laws?
There were 633 of them.
And they just, they didn't listen.
Well, do we have that problem nowadays? We have people that don't listen. We sure do, don't we?
You mentioned the sin that David committed when he did the count. Well, you didn't reflect on what happened after that. Mm-hmm. Because 70,000 people died because of it.
Think God was serious?
Well, he gave him, three different choices?
Yeah.
And, let's have the plague. And also, when you talked about Gibeah, Gibeah has a really bad reputation. If you remember back in Judges, the 19th chapter, you have the instance there where you had a Levite man who had married a concubine. And something had happened, and the concubine went back to her father. And so he went down to Bethlehem where the father lived, and they talked it out, and there was some issues trying. The father letting them go, but they did. But on their way back home, and he lived in Ephraim, in the mountains there. And on their way, it was taking too long, so he decided, well, let's stop at a town here. And then they said, well, Rabbah or Gibeah. But they stopped at Gibeah. Now, of course, in tradition, is that when you come to a town like that and you don't have a place to stay, you sit down there in the square, and somebody will come in and get you, pick it up. And an old man came in, and he coming back in from the fields, and he took them to his house. But the men of Gibeah saw them, and that night they came and they demanded that that old man turn him over and that they would have their way with him. But of course the old man said, no, no. So the traveler, the Levite traveler, throws his concubine out to them, and they have their way with her all night and kill her.
That was a Levite that did that too.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, yeah, there's quite a story there.
And what, in the morning he takes her and says, come on, let's go. And he sees she's dead. And so he puts her on his donkey and he goes home. And then he cuts her up into 12 pieces and sends the pieces to all 12 tribes and tells them, you know, about Gibeah. And he gets them all stirred up, and they go and they basically go and destroy Gibeah.
Anyone else?
Just one more thing in regards to you pointed out that you think God was serious. I think you pointed out again when you read Ezekiel 26 in verse 6. When it points out all the villages basically that came from Tyre were destroyed root and branch as well. And it's like, that sends a message I think we should all take mind of. Because Tyre was so corrupt and rotten, even everything that came from it needed to be destroyed to drive out the corruption. And I think that's something we need to take into consideration, because we can be destroyed just as easily by God if he chooses it.
Yeah, it's just like Sodom and Gomorrah. That wasn't the only two cities that were destroyed. One of them was Zoar or something like that. But anyway, anyone else? Okay, well, let's forge on here. We recall that Ephraim was Joseph's second son. And this is going on, and this curse that we've been talking about is going to reverse Jacob's blessings of Joseph's descendants. And we can see that if we go over and read in Genesis chapter 49, verse 22, for the account of the blessing that he received. Now his people are going to be led into captivity where they will die. And it says only woe can be expected when Jehovah departs from his people. Gilgal mentioned in this verse again, that's was the scene of a lot of God's blessings in the beginning. And it is in the Jordan Valley north of Jericho, and that was where they partake of the first fruits of the land when they came out of Egypt. They set the stones up there in memory of passing on the Jordan. And so now Gilgal symbolizes their rejection of God. And this is signified by his statement, I will love them no more. So basically what God is saying is that he hated them. And so that gives us an idea that it encompasses all the sins that these people were involved in. And he's not speaking of just the common sins or sins of ignorance, but he's talking about a real deep debt, the wickedness. In verse 16, he again recites, they'll have no posterity. they are going to become the Lo Rahama, or without Father's mercy, or Lo Ami, the not my people. In verse 17 it says, they shall wander among the nations. You know, if you'll recall, that was the sentence of Cain, to wander among the nation. And no more a nation, but they're going to be what's left of them are going to be strangers in other nations. There would not be a lot of survivors, and they would no longer be recognized by their tribe, by their nation, by their king, or whatever. And so how bad do you have to be for God to give up on you? But we see he went an awful long way. We see his patience with these people. So what do we learn in chapter 9? Well, we learn that something good can be turned to evil. You know, we hear a story occasionally about someone winning the lottery. You know, they were going all along and having an ordinary life, and then they come into all this money, and it causes them all kinds of grief. They fall apart. And so something good can very easily turn into something evil. Okay, let's go on and look at chapter 10. And this chapter continues on with the same theme as the previous chapter. You know, and Israel here, he's going to compare, and he's going to be comparing really all 12 tribes here to a vineyard. And you can go over into Isaiah chapter 5 and we'll see all kinds of references to a vineyard. So I'll read a few verses here. Israel empties his vine. He brings forth fruit for himself. According to the multitude of his fruit, he has increased altars. According to the bounty of his land, they have embellished his sacred pillars. Their heart is divided. Now they are held guilty. He will break down their altars. He will ruin their sacred pillars. For now they say, we have no king because we did not fear the Lord. And as for a king, what would he do for us? They have spoken words swearingly, falsely, in making a covenant. Thus judgment springs up like the hemlock in the furrows of the field. The inhabitants of Samaria fear because of the calf of Beth-Aven. For its people mourn for it, its priests shriek for it, because its glory has departed from them. The idol also shall be carried away to Assyria as a present for King Jared. And Ephraim shall receive shame, and Israel shall be ashamed of his own counsel. For Samaria, her king is cut off like a twig on the water. You know, one of the things that was done was one of those calves was given to Assyria to keep them from overrunning the country. And so these very objects that they were worshiping are going to be taken away. And one of them was done this way. You know, they're described as an empty vine, you know, and that's just one that's wasted or spoiled or lost its strength. Whatever fruit that it might produce is, by its remaining strength, is not going to be brought to God anyway. When the land yielded more, it just caused more apostasy for them. The more the land and they prospered, the more idols and altars they built. So you can see where their heads were. So in verse 2 indicates that their heart was divided, which means they failed to reverend God and only gave God lip service. Again, kind of reminds you of in a book of James, chapter 1, about verse 8, where it says, it's writing about the double-minded man. So we have people here that are in this condition, or Matthew 6:24, you can't serve God and mammon. And they were certainly serving mammon. They were so materialistic. So they were dividing their heart between God and Baal. We could go and read Zephaniah 1 and 5. It also speaks about this. And it talks about when we get down to, when we see the god of the Ammonites was Milcom. Some people think that's the same as Moloch. In Leviticus 18:2, God tells Moses specifically, do not let any of your offspring be offered up to Moloch. Now, these Canaanite deities, they were a combination of a lot of ancient Semitic faiths. Moloch was a Canaanite god of who was often portrayed with a bull's head, with horns and his idols, and his arms spread out. So he'd be associated with fire. So that's where they sacrificed their children. When it says we have no king, it can mean that they had no king at all, or the ones that they had were worthless. We've had politicians like that too. But Israel's king was to be God's anointed, so you could say that their rejection or disregard for a king was a rejection of God. Verses 5 and 6, Beth-Aven is another name for Bethel. Bethel was originally known in Hebrew as the house of God, but now it means the house of wickedness. Bethel was one of the places where one of the golden calves was worshipped. Verse 6 indicates that King Menahem gave the golden calf in Bethel to the king of Assyria to assure his assistance. We might recall also that if you had a victory over a nation, it was also seen as a victory over the god of that nation. And so, there's an interesting conversation in 2 Kings 18 about Assyria's representative speaking about the confidence they had in their god, and he tells him that none of their gods had the power to deliver them out of Sennacherib's hands. Beth-Aven, again in verse 7, or Bethel, is located in the region of Samaria. When it talks about being like a twig, that just means that it could be cut off quickly. And, some of your versions may translate twig as a straw or foam on the water. And so this was the fate of the last king of Israel, who was King Hosea. Verse 8, we see the fear and the distress of the people being carried away to captivity. We find this phrase in verse 8 in many other places in Scripture. This is where we have say to the mountains, cover us, fall on us. And so a phrase that denotes extreme pain, suffering, and so on. In Luke 23 and 20, it was used at the trial of Jesus prior to his crucifixion. We find the phrase again in Revelation 6, Isaiah 2. And it just describes terrible calamities that came over these people where death would be preferred to life. In other words, they would want to take their own life instead of going through. Verse 9, it mentions Gibeah again, is singled out as a example of the whole nation again. When we see the two grand transgressions in verse 10, I think one of the things it's talking about there is the people has forsaken gods, and they've joined themselves to idols. And it is also probably a reference to the two calves in Bethel and Dan. I didn't read any further than that, I don't believe, but it says in verse 11, Ephraim is a trained heifer that loves to thrash grain. But I harnessed her fair neck. I will make Ephraim pull a plow. Judah shall plow. Jacob shall break his clod. Sow for yourself righteousness. Reap in mercy. Break up your fallow ground, for it's time to seek the Lord till he comes and rains righteousness on you. You have plowed wickedness. You have reaped iniquity. You have eaten the fruit of lies because you trusted in your own way and in the multitude of your mighty men. Therefore, tumult shall arise among your people. All your fortresses shall be plundered. And Shalom plundered Beth-Abel in the day of battle. A mother dashes in pieces upon her children. Thus it shall be done to you, O Bethel, because of your great wickedness. At dawn, the king of Israel shall be cut off entirely. So, again, quite a combination there in those verses. Here again, that Hosea uses an agricultural metaphor to talking about a trained cow wearing God's yoke, indicating the initial readiness to obey God's covenant. Israel was instructed to sow, and you might say Israel was instructed to obey, and the seeds that will produce righteousness to attain God's mercy. However, they did just the opposite again of what they should be doing. They trusted in their military power. Their warriors would be defeated. Their fortresses are going to be destroyed. They have plowed wickedness. The fruit of their lies, talking about their false gods, are bringing them death, captivity, and misery. There isn't any mercy even on the women and children. Hebrews 10:31 comes to mind here. Does anybody happen to recall what that verse is? It is a fearful thing to do what? All in the hands of a living God. And so we see all these things that could happen if you fall in the hands of the living God. So I think that's what we learn in this chapter. It's quite a bad deal for you to not trust in God and His Son, Jesus Christ, and follow His commandments. So that's the end of chapter 10. Is there any comments? That pretty much has taken up all our time. I appreciate your attentiveness. And we'll press on next Lord's Day, beginning in chapter 10. We'll begin in chapter 11 next Lord's Day. Oh, that's right. He doesn't. Yeah, Brother Rick will be with us then, and the basket dinner. Anything else before we close?